Here we are. Remember last week I said the third chakra was one of my favorite chakras? This is the other one. How could it not be? The heart. And I know I'm not supposed to have favorite chakras, and I will say that Eric spoke a little bit. He said this is the most important chakra. I didn't stop him, but of course there is no one most important chakra. But the heart chakra really is a unique place in our astral spine, because it's the first time that we've moved now completely into a formless state. Now remember, we're talking about these chakras from the bottom up. We're moving back towards oneness with God. But you remember the first class I spoke about as we were manifested out of that divine energy as a thought, as a dream really. So there was a thought, energy was manifested, and as it descended through the chakras, it becomes form. So we've had the first three chakras, which have a lot of physical attributes to them, sort of earth and stone, solid, then water, then fire last week. And in that fire, past seeds of karma, that is inclinations, experiences that we've brought into this life from many previous lives, get purified, literally, fire as purification. So remember I said a lot of transformation happens there. It goes from solid to formless, but it starts in that solid. You can just feel how we're working our way, breaking out of this solid form. But what does that mean? It means all of those ways where we can separate things, where we can delineate things, where it's me, where it's Jose, where it's Linda, where it's a chair, where there's earth, where there are rivers. Thank you so much. The heart is the first time where it's formless. The element is air. It has no form. And what that really means to us that's important is that we are moving closer back to that state of feeling separate from anything. We're beginning to remember, if you will. I mean, it's not as linear as we have to put it in words. It's not really like an evolution, but it makes it easier to grasp it when we're trying to talk about it, that we're moving closer and closer back to that state of not being able to distinguish form, of not feeling separate. It's more a state of our soul is beginning to remember that it is a part of everything. It's moved to that place where we're beginning to have those memories, where when we're resting in the heart's love, now this doesn't mean human love as we know it, and I'm going to speak about that, but the natural state of love in the heart, which is, as Eric was alluding to, and at times coming out and saying it, it is the love of God. Now, we forget that, of course, and this is what happens as we're descending and manifesting. We start having likes and dislikes. We start having these manifestations. I like this person, but I don't like that person. I like people who do such and such, but I don't like other people who don't do it that way. And we start. And all of those thoughts that we carry, so naturally, if you tried to stop your mind from having them, well, you'd just be working on it forever. It's impossible. This is why Swamiji says when he talks about the chakras, he says you can't go after every like or dislike and try and fix it. Imagine how long it takes you to fix one problem in your life, one tendency that you have. And how often every one of us in this room has had the experience of you've worked on something in yourself, a tendency. Maybe you used to be more jealous than you are now. Maybe you used to be a little greedier. Maybe you used to be more frightened or carry more secrets. And you've worked on it and worked on it, and you really think you're free of it. And all of a sudden, one day, you find yourself in a situation, and there it is. And it's like, oh, man. I mean, in my life, I've said, I've spent 10 years in therapy at one point working on just that thing. What is it doing back here? You can't go after it point by point by point. You know, Swamiji uses an example when he talks about the chakras and energy and how we're nothing but energetic beings, so we're so magnetic. He talks about looking at a bar of metal, not a magnetized bar of metal. What's the difference between a magnetized bar and not? In a magnetized bar, all of the atoms have positive in one direction and negative in another. It's been magnetized. It has an energy like that. If you just pick up any old piece of metal, the molecules are everywhere, scattered every which way. And if you tried one by one to turn those molecules around, just get them all lined up exactly perfectly so that all the negative ones were pointing one way and all the positive poles were pointing the other way, well, you know, there's a really good chance that by the time you even got a fraction of the way through, the ones you just fixed would be going wherever they want to go again. It would just be the nature of it. Now, he uses that as an example of why we need to have a teacher. So I don't want to just leave that hanging. We need to have a spiritual teacher because by becoming attuned to those teachers that we call gurus, I mean somebody whose energy is, you know, for lack of a better phrase right now, all sort of headed in the right direction, whose energy is really all the time focused, concentrated. They live at the point between the eyebrows. They live there no matter what it looks like they're doing in the world. When we allow ourselves to be more receptive, which is one of the qualities of the heart chakra, and we find a teacher, we call it becoming attuned to them. But really what is happening in that word is that they are energetic beings also, and by being within the realm of their energy, they're basically just lining us all up in the right direction. They're helping draw our energy to the point between the eyebrows. I think I've told some of you this story, but it's so adorable and it just popped into my mind. I often talk about energy. No matter what I'm talking about, I talk about energy because you have to. You can't teach anything on the spiritual path without doing it. And I use a couple of examples in the world. I don't want to get into them right now, but I wind up talking about neutrinos. In fact, I think I even mentioned them here in the first class, which until very recently were the smallest particles that the physicists could find. Now they've found a smaller particle, but I don't think they've named it yet. But they're pretty sure one day they're going to get as small as they can get, but they won't. We know that, of course. What they're looking for is God. It's really the truth. If you read the physicists, they're looking for that force which drives everything, that's a part of everything. They're even beginning to know it, but that's another whole talk. But there was a young man who was in a group of people in a recovery home where I used to be the medical director of a chemical dependency rehab program. And he listened to my lectures for months, and he heard me talk over and over and over about neutrinos. And one day he said to his mother, "You know, I really like that Dr. Rubenstone. She has her neutrinos all in a row." And, you know, in a way, little did he know that it would be right. It's like as we can magnetize our energy to that of our teacher is what this really is, to these highest beings, those people who really what the heart is about, and Eric kept saying this, but I want to expound on it, is learning as we allow energy to flow freely through our heart chakra. You remember that image that I gave of a lotus flower, 108 petaled lotus flower just opening right here at the heart chakra, opening so that energy can just flow. We're doing that so that we can direct all of our love, all of our devotion, all of our natural heart's feeling to God, which is, again, that place of oneness, of unity. And when we become formless, or we have a momentary experience even of what that could be like, were we to let go of some of these boundaries that we so carefully and mostly unconsciously keep around ourselves or keep ourselves contained in, which we do, we all do, as we start experiencing those edges and that sense of freedom and of oneness, we feel so much more secure. We feel safer Sometimes we don't even know why. And I find myself constantly every day, as I'm seeing clients mostly, or teaching classes, or whatever I'm doing, saying to people, don't worry about the why. As soon as you start worrying about the why, you feel so much better. You lose the feeling of feeling better. Because the feeling of feeling better comes precisely because we have magically drawn ourselves away from our mind, which keeps going and which has an endless number of questions, reasons, doubts. It just simply does. That's why that image of trying to turn every molecule in a steel bar around is such a brilliant one. You just get, it's impossible. It couldn't happen. Somehow we have to bring ourselves near something that we feel drawn to. One of the teachings of Yogananda, his sayings that I haven't mentioned before, but they're so perfect here for the heart. And I'm sorry I put the whiteboard away, but I'll paint the image for you. What's really happening in each of these chakras, which we've said, is we want energy to flow in and up. As soon as it goes out into the world, we are creating more desires. And this is something else Eric alluded to, but it's very important. And I was just saying to you, we can't try and quench every one of those desires. It's just impossible. Because even by virtue of the fact that you have a desire and you satisfy it, and that feels so good when you satisfy a desire, it leads you to create more desires. It's a very tricky thing. As long as the mind is engaged, Yogananda told Swami Kriyananda a cute little story. I don't know what you would call it, but there was a man, a very powerful man. He had a lot of psychic powers and magical powers, who was being bothered by the devil. And he said he was going to put curses into this powder, or something into this powder that would inhibit the devil from getting to him. And he did that, and he said all of these mantras over the powder and did everything he was supposed to do, and the devil just came up and laughed in his face. And he said, before you could even finish your mantra, I was already in the mantra, and I was in the powder. And it really just says that's what happens with our mind. You can't heal a problem of the mind with the mind. It's impossible. The mind will never let you do that. It will keep coming up with more and more and more ways to divert you. There's a wonderful saying in this, another book that I love, which I think I've mentioned here. I've read the book so many times. It's called Callings by Greg Lavoie. Beautiful, beautiful book. But in there's a line that says, whenever you think that you're about to make a really big and important change in your life, every devil in hell will jump up to greet you. And Eric had a line, something like that. I don't remember what it was. But it's true. And what is that, every devil in hell? It's our ego. We want to make a change, and it's just so hard. That's why moving into the fourth chakra is really so meaningful. I want to say, by the way, we're not 100%. This is the first time I've complied, by the way. But there's a lot of... Yeah, so I don't want anybody who's not wearing green to feel badly. First time I got it. Somebody reminded me earlier today, or I wouldn't have gotten it, but we have a lot of green in the... There you go, Reba. Wrap yourselves up in this green, in this extraordinary heart chakra energy, because probably Connie will show us exactly why it matters. But because the heart is really where the language of the heart speaks to the soul. It doesn't speak to the ego. And that's a huge change. Is that, you know, there's a line from The Little Prince that said, there's two lines actually, one that I don't remember the end of at all, but it says, the heart knows no reason. Then there's a beautiful rest of that. I don't remember it. If anybody else does, speak now or forever. Nobody knows it, okay. Doesn't matter, but it's true right from the beginning. The heart, in its most expansive, highest place, is not a place of reason, of logic. That's not the heart. In its true nature, not, and I'm going to come back in just a little bit, not talking about what we do with the heart in this world, in this body, as we're still working our way back to God, but the heart's true nature will speak to the soul. The other line in The Little Prince that's so beautiful is a line that says, it is only with the heart that we can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye, saying you can't get where you want to go through any of the senses. You won't get there. You think you will, but you'll keep trying and trying and trying. This is why these two biblical quotes, the first is, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall find God. It means once we've raised this energy up and we're letting the heart speak its soul language, then you pretty much have a much clearer path to really see the divine. And the other thing that Christ, I think Christ said it, but it could have been one of his disciples, no man hath seen God. And what they're saying is that when we're still attached to this physical body, when we're still dealing with likes, dislikes, demands, all those, again, what I keep calling inclinations within ourselves, we really can't commune with the divine. We have to bring our energy up. Why? I was very glad that Eric made a distinction today, and it's a very important distinction. The technique that he wanted to share with all of us, and so I said, of course, come and do that for the fourth chakra. It made sense, but I was just beginning to get a little nervous when he was doing it, thinking, I'm going to have to stand up there and tell everybody this is not meditation. But fortunately, he did it himself, which was wonderful. It's not, because we can't just go heart to spiritual eye, heart to spiritual eye. There's a whole astral spine that we have to be dealing with, or we would be really imbalanced. If you just open up the heart and you're not grounded and you don't see where you're going and you haven't brought that fire and energy to it, if you're just like, oh, I'm not going to be attached to things of the world, and you become very apathetic. So it's not, you know, and very wishy-washy. You know, you can't, you just think you're being really spiritual if nothing's important to you, you're not attached to anything, nothing bothers you, nothing touches you. That's not spiritual. That's shut down. That's in denial. That's a very different thing. When your heart's open, you love everybody. That's the point. You love everybody. You love everybody and everything. And when your heart's totally open, you can't make a distinction because you see the truth that there is no distinction. I had a profound experience this past summer that I'd like to share with all of you, but I'm going to say again something I say often. This is not just my experience. Anybody in this room, you've probably had experiences. You could have this experience. So this is nothing that was special or unique to me. I just happened to have the experience. I did a month of seclusion, which a lot of you know. It was a very deep, meaningful experience. I was totally secluded, totally unplugged for a month. It doesn't sound long, but it's long. I mean, no phone, no computer, no television, no books other than Swami and Master's books, Swami and Master's music. And it was hard at the beginning. It was very hard. After about a week, I was starting to talk myself into coming home. But fortunately, I caught myself. I caught my mind doing that trick. And so I went out and walked for 2 hours every day, and I started a practice of consciously, thoughtfully, actively seeing God in everything. I would look at a rock, and I would stand there, and I would say, you're looking at God. I would look at a tree. I was secluding on the ocean for the first 2 weeks. I would look at every wave, everything, every leaf. I made it a practice. I was repeating it over and over. You're looking at God, and God, you're loving God, and God's loving you. Oh, that's such a beautiful manifestation of God. Constantly. I mean, I had nothing else to do, so that's what I did. The last part of my seclusion, I went up to Ananda Village, and one day I was walking, and that's more, it's in the woods, part of the village up there, and you're walking on really old dirt fire roads if you get out of the main village. And at some point when I was looking at a bush and talking to God, a deer came up right next to me, and it totally freaked me out. I mean, it really freaked me. It brought me right out of that, like, God's in everything space. And I said, oh my God, all right, I'm going to just like walk into the bushes or turn my back on her and not look at her. You know, you don't know what they're going to do. And it spooked me. And then I caught myself again. And I said, Shanti, how could you? This is a beautiful manifestation of God. So I turned around and I looked her in the eye, and we were like here, like this. And she looked me in the eye, and we each took a couple steps closer. And in that moment, I knew that neither of us recognized the other as other. There was none of that. We were one. It was completely clear to me. And that deer and I walked together for about 10 or 15 minutes. We'd walk down the path just side by side, and then we'd look at each other. I mean, I absolutely believe she was smiling at me, you know, but it was just amazing. And the instant I had a feeling of, wow, this is amazing, she left. Because as soon as it was, wow, this was amazing, I was out of it. When you open your heart in that way, and we need to learn how to practice that in simple ways. I was telling a story this weekend who we went up and we had this beautiful retreat, 21 women up at Ananda Village. It was profound. There are a couple women here who were there, and several, and they would tell you it was just an amazing experience in a short weekend. But I told this story of being back and forth with my husband and of about 10 years ago having this experience where I was told, he's yours, you're going to be with him for the rest, as long as you're both alive, so what are you going to do to make it good, you know, and get out of this, I'm in, I'm out, I'm in, I'm out. And he does this wrong, he does that wrong, if only he could do this. Constant in my mind. And it was ridiculous, and I'll tell you how scary it is. Anybody who knew us would have said to you that I was a perfect wife, that I was taking such great care of him, loving him well. He felt that. But there was this constant noise in my head. And what I got that day is every time you look at him, every single time you look at him, Shanti, you will never have another negative thought again. You see God looking back at you. You see Divine Mother looking out of those eyes. Now, I'm telling you this story about my husband and I, and the whole weekend people keep saying, oh, I'm going to take that home. I'm going to do that with my husband. And that's wonderful. And I can guarantee you, because it's been so many years, a lot of people have changed their marriages based on this little exercise. But that wasn't even what I got. What I got is, do that as often as you can with as many people as you can, because it's the truth. Because every single person that we see is a manifestation, a pure manifestation of divine energy. Everybody. Hence that story of when I asked Patricia's son, or somebody asked Patricia's son, do you mean we're even supposed to love Hitler? I told this story a couple weeks ago, and she said, oh, Hitler needs our love more than anybody. And that really stopped me in my tracks, having been born and raised Jewish, and I was not a great fan of his. But suddenly I could feel my heart open when she said that. The more we practice, that's what devotion means. It means opening our heart to its natural tendency, and its natural tendency is to find its way home to that one big heart, that pure manifestation of love, of bliss, of joy, that is God, that is everywhere around us. And the veil that lies between us and that, that looks so complicated in life so many times, we're up against it, and we think like we're in another space. It's a very thin veil. I get the feeling sometimes all we need to do is just go like this, like you would a little organza drape or something. Just push it aside, and we could walk into it. Everything is calling us to do that. So how can we start practicing this here on earth? What do? Well, we do just what I did, what I'm doing. I can't say did. I wish I could say did. As I said this weekend, I wish I could tell you all that I've been 100% successful with my husband. I have not, but I've been way, way, way better than I was, way better. And the minute I hear myself getting into an argument with him, I can barely stand it. I say to myself, where are you going? What is this about? In you, what is this about? Because I'm with him. I know I'm with him. I feel an enormous amount of love for him. And I just have to keep transforming that love, transmuting it literally, consciously. We have to keep bringing that energy up. And good thing to practice where it's hardest. You know, it's pretty easy when people don't mean a lot to you. You ever notice they can say things you know they're not true? They can criticize you at times. You don't get tugged on. But those people that tug on us, good sign that it's a good place to work on it. Human love perfected, very beautiful way to get as close as we can to God's love. Now, it's the easiest, of course, when we have our children and their babies. It's so easy to love the baby. And of course, the baby is so close to God still. Now, really, they're confused about all this in a way. They're sort of like, what's going on here? Why am I in this body? Why are these people speaking to me gaga goo goo? Don't, you know, I'm just in a little body. I'm not a little soul. And I mean, we've heard many, many stories of this now. Master always says he remembers exactly what it was like getting into that body, that it was like putting on a heavy overcoat on a hot summer day, and then he had to get used to it. But I've seen this over and over. My niece just had a baby now 7 months ago. I went to meet the baby when she was 4 weeks old. Of all the babies I've ever seen, I've never had an experience. That baby was so annoyed. She was so indignant about being in that little body and having to be treated like a baby. She was angry. I mean, I just could see it in her. I felt like I was communicating with her about it. I thought, I better not tell my niece this because, you know, my niece wouldn't be pleased to hear her kids really upset about being here. She wouldn't know how to take it, but it's the truth. So it's easy. That motherly love, although I think it's parental, but that strong maternal instinct that really does primarily flow so easily through women is very close to divine love, pure love. Doesn't stay pure very long because even by the time they're toddlers and getting on your nerves, it's no longer such a pure love. But when they're babies, it is. And if you can remember the nature of that love, all the ways that we can practice with each other, practice with animals. I mean, practice like I practiced with trees, with rocks, with the ocean, with everything, till I got to that place where for those moments, that deer and I were not at all afraid of each other. We didn't even realize we were different from each other. It was just one of the most remarkable experiences that I've ever had. Not so easy to come to. Now, I started saying something a while ago. I want to go back to it. Master had a phrase called thwarting cross currents of ego. Thwarting cross currents of ego. And I realized that all this time that we've been trying to talk about what blocks energies at the chakras, that's what it is. It's the ego coming in with likes, dislikes, desires in the world that take our energy out. And you could imagine if you have a tube coming this way and suddenly you send energy this way, it's thwarting cross currents. So what we want to do is we want to move beyond as many of our likes and dislikes as we can. It's not easy to do it one by one. That's what I was saying. So how do we do it? We do it by some of these techniques that we're teaching you. We taught you a little bit of Hung Saw 2 weeks ago. I don't know what Connie and Lahari are going to do next week. I actually won't be here next week. But depending on what they do, when I come back, our seventh and next to the last week of our class, I would like us to spend a good amount of time practicing Hung Saw, really teaching some of the techniques that we teach in Meditation 1 here, because that's the only way that we wind up being able to make it in this lifetime to that place further and further and further away from likes, dislikes, and all of these desires that keep us, you know, I just had this image. I don't know, I couldn't think of the right word, but I have these vines growing up my house. I'm either having a deja vu or I've mentioned it here. And did I mention it? Yeah, and how it's impossible to pull them away. I had to cut them at their roots. And the Gayatri Mantra, interestingly, this thousands and thousands of year old Gayatri Mantra, those are some of the words in it. Cut me free like you would cut a cucumber free from its creeper. You know, literally, that's the translation of the Gayatri Mantra. Because it's so hard, we get so stuck. I mean, it's not even stuck, it's bonded to so many of the ways that we are. So it's hard to go in and try and fix each one of those, but it's very easy to sit down twice a day and do a practice where we're just drawing energy up our spine to our third eye, letting it flow back down, drawing it back up, letting it flow back down. It would be like cleaning out a pipe with a hose. Very easy to send the water one way, send it the other way, send it till you get that pipe, that river, which is really what our astral spine is, free of all of these attachments that we have. So we can't think our way there, which is what I was saying, but we can practice our way there. And we have to do a practice that's going to take us in a spiritual direction, not a practice that we're going to understand with our mind. Because remember, we can't solve the spiritual problem with the mind. It's impossible. Anybody have any comments or questions? What he meant by literally and figuratively have meaning. Let me just think for a minute to try and, it's such a subtle, the answer is so subtle. I don't know if he answered it in that talk, by the way. I don't think he ever spoke to it because I remember waiting for the explanation of it. The figurative is really in some ways how we've been speaking about it. So that's easier. But, you know, I'm not sure I can answer that question honestly and well yet. Let me find the answer and come back to you. I could think about it and come up with something, but I want to make sure that I'm telling you the truth. It's a very good question, and it's an important question, actually. So I would like to come back to you with it, but I will. Anybody else? Stacy? I'm really glad you brought that up. Stacy's talking about posture, which Eric went into a little bit. When I teach Med 1, I have no idea how anybody else teaches it, so I don't know if you've gotten this or not. But I always teach people to roll their shoulders like this and then to stop when they're back like this, and you can see right away how your heart's open, and then relax there because you don't want to be tense when you're meditating. And it's a very good thing to do, as Eric was saying, Swami Kriyananda used to lead with his heart. He had had his heart so wide open, he would lead with it, Eric said, almost like a bow. And interestingly, in the Bhagavad Gita, because archery was such a big thing at the time of Krishna and Arjuna and those families, I mean, that was a real moment in history, and archery was a game. The bow in this allegory of the Bhagavad Gita stands for, allegorically, the spine. So Swami was just so wide open. But a good way to do that is to just roll your shoulders till you find that place and then relax there. Again, you can't be tense like this. Eric had you doing an exaggerated version of it. But absolutely, it will change your experience. If none of us know how to sit up straight, when I examine people, I mean, as a doctor, when I'm examining people, I'm saying, take some good deep breaths through your mouth. I say to people all the time, how in the world have you lived to be this age? You do not know how to breathe. I mean, people just don't breathe. They don't move any air. Air is energy. It's prana. It's what we're using to purify and transform. And people just are over like this and taking shallow breaths. No, we have to learn how to get comfortable, sitting up straight, moving a lot of air in and out. This is why doing some hatha yoga is such a good thing for us. It would be wonderful if we all had all day to do all these different things that we're talking about. But even if you learn how to do, and maybe we'll do them in 2 weeks, we'll do just a couple of what are called full yogic breaths, because it gets you moving a lot of air and energy, and it gets your heart open. And even if you just stood up and did that before you meditated, it would be a wonderful thing. These super conscious living, they're called super conscious living exercises that Eric did. I think most of you, although not everyone in the room, so I'll say this, has done them. And he was a little shy and hesitant, I think. He had you do it twice. When I teach meditation, I tell people, you get up at 5 in the morning, you stand up next to your bed, and you stand there and you do, I am awake and ready. I am awake and ready. I am awake and ready. And you do it. Not just, I'm worried about the people's ears listening to this, but not just 2 or 3 times, but you do it. Guess what happens? You are awake and ready. It's only 5, but there's no way you stay asleep. These are affirmations. They're statements of the highest possible energy we could have, the best we could be. They're not, oh man, I really wish I was awake. Oh, come on, God, help me be awake. No, I am awake and ready. And it sounds silly, but they're not silly. They were brought here by Yogananda, by this great master who used to have people standing by the side of the road doing these. And the nuns would get so embarrassed. And he'd say, why are you embarrassed? People are only looking at you because they don't know what you're doing. What difference does it make? Just do them. And they'd be up there, I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic. And you start feeling it. You know, you really wake up. Next time you're really tired at work, just slip into a closet somewhere and do a little bit of I am awake and ready. It wakes you up. You think about opening your heart starts opening. These things really work. They actually really work, so practice them. They take a minute or two. Anybody else? Question? Jose.
Yeah, I do like the structure that, we create this beautiful base with the lower 3 chakras.
Yeah.
And then that energy that connects to the heart, then it has a very good foundation, right?
Yes.
Without the foundation, it's like everything would collapse.
Yeah, without a foundation, it would collapse. And collapse here means what I was saying. It wouldn't look like beautiful devotion directed to God. It would look like love of somebody, love of some material thing. Even though it would be fed a little by second chakra energy, it would look like lust. It wouldn't look... I had a friend who... I've told this story before, too. Many, many years ago, she went to a place in Florida. She was on a vacation there when she came back. This is a woman who I've traveled many, many places in the world with, and we like the same places, same movies, same books. She said to me, you have got to go to this place. This place is gorgeous. It's this place on the west coast of Florida. And she just kept telling me and telling me. Finally, next chance I had to have a few days off, I jumped down to this place, she told me, and it was just a pit. I mean, it was like, I kept thinking, am I in the right place? And then I started thinking about what was going on with her when she was there. And I realized, she came down here with a guy, their first vacation, she was in love. You know, it's like, so it looked one way to her, but it did not look that way to me. That's what happens if we don't have, because remember, we're talking about this in these terms like how you are, and you're absolutely right what you're saying, but it's not just a physical foundation. It's an energetic foundation. It's a foundation that keeps saying, no, 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 go in this direction. No, here's where you want to go. Hey, come back. Let's get into the center and remember, look up, be positive. Be expansive. That's what those lower chakras do. They keep us on track one by one by one. And we need to keep building on it. And we can't skip them. You know, here's one more interesting little story from this weekend that we did. I think I told you the title of the weekend was Let's Talk About Love. And it was a workshop for just women. But it was about, the first part was sort of, wanted to focus it a little on the difference between love, human, and divine. I'm not sure we focused it there, but it didn't matter. There was so much creative, expansive spiritual energy. And the second day, we were looking a little more at devotion. But there was a woman there who's been meditating for years. She's been a part of Ananda for years. She's never been down here, lived in Seattle and then the village. Really a deep, uplifted, beautiful soul. She said that it was not all that long ago that she realized that when she was meditating, and again, there are different techniques, but even with Hong Sa, if you want at times, it's harder with Hong Sa because you're chanting Hong Sa, but let's say without it, even if you just want to imagine bringing energy up your spine and stopping at each chakra for a moment, noticing it, first chakra, earth, grounded, second chakra, fluidity, creativity, flexibility, Yeah, third chakra, fire. You just stop and you just notice it. You don't even do that much thinking. She said she realized one day that when she does her kriyas, so a particular type of meditation where you do stop at each chakra with one version of it, she said she noticed she was just skipping her heart chakra. She would like go fire right up here. You know, and it was interesting. I mean, she was saying her heart, she was so busy protecting something in her heart, but it took her a long time to realize that she couldn't even go there in meditation. And as soon as she had that conscious realization and she would start stopping at her heart, something happened in her. And I tell you, interestingly, I've known this woman for years. We've never said more than two words to each other. I was up at Seattle. I've been to the village. We had such a profound connection over this weekend. And I was thinking to myself, what has gone on with this woman? What's happened with her? She not just beautiful? These big, gorgeous blue eyes, stunningly beautiful, actually physically beautiful, but the energy, you know, it's the energy that you could see that was so beautiful. And the whole time, the first night I was thinking, wow, she looks like a different woman. And the next day she said, I just found my heart, is basically what she said. It was really remarkable having that experience of her before I knew the story. So here we are, just reclaiming parts of ourselves. You know, just claiming. You just meet somebody and you know, I met a new patient today in my office, and I wasn't with him 15 minutes, and I was saying to myself, I really hope this man chooses to work with me. Boy, does he need to do some work on his third chakra. I mean, just feel it. I could see his whole life falling apart because he won't claim his power. Now, I couldn't exactly say those words to him today, but I could try and entice him to do a little spiritual work, and by the time he left, he was like, great, I've worked with many therapists. Nobody's ever talked to me about spirituality. I'm back. And I just thought, thank you, God, because he needs it. You know, you can just read it in people. Okay, we're not trying to unwind that, but one side of that's upward moving energy, one's downward, as Kundalini, that powerful force, gets awakened in us as we have that intense desire to know God, which is like igniting something. It starts neutralizing those energies. And it does it in that, literally, energetically, in that pattern. Ida, Pingala, Sushumna, till everything's right in the central spiritual spine, which is called
more
the
like
Sushumna.
But
that there are two different things. You are, but these thwarting cross currents of ego are when we send our energy out. I'm going to fall in love with that. I want that. I need that. I love that. I love this. I don't. That's cross currents, which are going 90 degrees in the opposite direction, really stopping the energy. Yeah. That's down and out as opposed to in and up. Okay, let me just